Let's do this!
I think it's time to blow this scene. Get everybody in the stuff together. Okay, 3, 2, 1, let's jam.
Everybody, welcome movie lovers of all levels. You are listening to an early episode of The Projectionist here on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver and in Canada, well, Vancouver, Canada, just to make sure, and online at CITR.ca. My name is Michael Adelior, and this is a show where I review movies, share my commentaries about anything that involves filmmaking and movies and cinema, report news on local cinema events, and from time to time have in-depth interviews with filmmakers. Last Tuesday, I had an in-depth interview with the filmmaker Mike Friedman. So that was a cool episode. You can check that online on citr.ca/fill-in, and then I think you can see the podcast for the Projectionist episode. I'm just a guy who loves filmmaking and loves movies. Today is Friday, June 28, 2013, and the time right now is 7:03 a.m. Awesome. And this is The Projectionist Pilot Episode 7. On this episode, I'll be reviewing the movies World War Z, or World War Z. I prefer Z, just, you know. And the movie, the comedy, The Heat, the one with Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy. If you want to share your thoughts on the movies being viewed or answer any of my questions, give me a call, 604-822-2487, 604-822-2487. Or you can send me an email, theprojectionist.citr@gmail.com. Or you can send a Twitter. My Twitter handle is theprojectionist.citr@gmail.com. My Twitter handle is @Michael_Adelior. Okay, that's Michael_Adelior. And you spell that Edillor. So this show is not just me reviewing movies, but it is also to provide a platform for the community to share your thoughts and have some discussions. Think talk radio, but for movies and filmmaking. And by the way, when I say community, I mean whoever's listening out there, not just in Vancouver, but all over the world. Because through our website, citr.ca, you could basically hear the show live anywhere, anytime. So, and a fair warning, if I don't get to answer your call, please forgive me. Just be patient and give me a call back during the PSA breaks, and hopefully I can answer your call by then. So, yes, awesome. Without further ado, let's do this. This is the trailer for World War Z.
You know is that the aircraft touched down.
Yeah, are these the roots?
What is it?
Statue of Liberty or snowman?
Blackout and declared martial law.
Daddy, what's martial law?
How do we know they're coming?
They're coming.
worldwide.
Is anyone doing better than we are?
We've lost the East Coast. Moscow's still dark. Life as we know it will come to an end in 90 days. It's on us to change that.
I can't leave my family.
Don't pretend your family is exempt. When we talk about the end of humanity,
sent from this installation.
Pretty obvious nobody back home bothered to read it.
If I could get into Russia, where would I start?
Russia's a black hole.
I need answers.
Guns are half measure.
You're with the CIA?
But they're not with me.
Karen.
Is there anything left out there?
If we knew where this thing started, maybe we could kill it.
These things have a weakness.
Every human being we save
is
one less to fight.
Yes, that was World War Z. And the movie was directed by Mark Forster. And to those who don't know him, he is the director of Quantum of Solace, the James Bond, Daniel Craig movie, I think the second one. And that wasn't so good. But he was well known. He got discovered with the movie Monsters Ball, the one where Halle Berry won an Oscar, and he did a follow-up for that called Finding Neverland, the one with Johnny Depp and playing the writer for the Peter Pan novels. I forgot the name of the author, but so those are the movies that Mark Forster did. And the screenplay is by Matthew Michael Carnahan, and he's known for writing The Kingdom, the one with Jamie Foxx, and they're in like Saudi Arabia or something, and they're like fighting terrorists. And he also did The Lions for Lambs, the one directed by Robert Redford, and I think the one with Tom Cruise, Meryl Streep, and I think, yeah, and yeah. So Matthew Michael Carnahan. So he's the one who wrote those two films. And also one of the writers, Drew Goddard, he co-wrote The Cabin in the Woods. And he also wrote Cloverfield. And he's also known for the TV series, writing the TV series Lost, Angel, and Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And then there's also Damon Lindelof. To those who don't know him, Damon Lindelof wrote Prometheus, Cowboys and Aliens, and he's the creator and writer of the TV series Lost. So, three writers are credited on the screenplay. That's Matthew Michael Carnahan, Drew Goddard, and Damon Lindelof. And I think those are the three that's credited, but I heard that there's more screenwriters who worked on the screenplay. And the screenplay is based on the screen story by Matthew Michael Carnahan and J. Michael Straczynski. And J. Michael Straczynski is known for writing Changeling, the one with Angelina Jolie and directed by Clint Eastwood. And he also wrote the screenplay for Ninja Assassin. So how it things goes is that I guess you credit that it's weird, the credits system for the Writers Guild of America, but you're written as a story, but if you don't write a screenplay or something, different author. But anyway, so everything is based on the novel by Max Brooks, and it's the same title, World War Z. And first off, full disclosure, I haven't read the book World War Z. And before I saw the movie, you know, Now, so I haven't read the book before I saw the movie. I haven't followed any of the production news or behind the scenes about the making of the movie. So I say that because apparently the movie World War Z is totally different from the book, and also the production was marred with story changes and conflict in vision. The story goes, the director Mark Foster and Brad Pitt, the main star and one of the producers of the film, had a disagreement with the direction of the film. And then after a first cut of the film, they ended up doing a lot of reshoots, as in totally changing the movie's story, everything, including the ending. So to some, that may be a sign that, it's not a good movie or something, But now there's a leak that original ending, the storyline, got leaked online, and so I'll talk about that later. And it's an interesting, comparison between the original movie and the one that got released. So, I'll talk about that later. So, all those things that went on, I wasn't aware of them. I wasn't aware of the problems and production issues the movie faced or the script changes. I also did not have the hang-up or bias of having read the book before seeing the movie. So I don't have a point of comparison between the movie and the book. I was only aware that of them as I was preparing for the show. So, because I heard a lot of people, most of their complaints is that those people that read the book hated the movie because it's totally different from the book. In fact, it did not adapt anything from the book, So I didn't have that, So I like zombie movies. I don't love zombie movies, but for the most part, I like watching them. I like watching them not because of the zombie monsters, but the scenarios you see in zombie movies. When you think of zombie movies, you instantly think of survival scenario, instant survival mode. You don't want to die, and as much as dying is bad, the worst thing than dying is to die getting eaten by a zombie and then becoming a zombie. That's worse. That's messed up, and it's like that fear of getting eaten. I hate that. Have you seen Anaconda? The one with John Voight and Ice Cube, man, and Jennifer Lopez. Yeah, that idea of getting eaten by a snake, but yeah, who is not afraid of getting eaten? Anyway, there's a passage at the back of every trade paperback of The Walking Dead. I know, and to those who don't know, The Walking Dead is this comic book written by Robert Kirkman, and it's been adapted into a TV series, The Walking Dead. And in the trade paperbacks, there's a passage that says, "How many hours are in a day when you don't spend half of them watching television? When is the last time any of us really worked for something that we wanted? How long had it been since any of us really needed something that we wanted? The world we knew is gone. The world of commerce and frivolous necessity has been replaced by a world of survival and responsibility. An epidemic of apocalyptic proportions has swept the globe, causing the dead to rise and feed on the living. In a matter of months, society has crumbled. No government, no grocery stores, no mail delivery, and no cable TV. In a world ruled by the dead, we are forced to finally start living." So that's from The Walking Dead passage. And that paragraph, that encompasses what makes zombie films awesome, or the zombie genre awesome, for me anyway. It's the idea that it's live and survive or get eaten and be a walking dead, It's a primal thought that cuts through all the BS that our society has set up. No more rich and poor, popular or nobody, pretty or ugly, straight or gay. It doesn't matter what ethnicity you have, whether you are black, white, brown, yellow, red, you know, or whether you believe in God or follow a religion, or you're an atheist, you know. It cuts away all that labels that we and society at large have imposed on ourselves to divide us from one another. So when I first, you know, when I first saw the trailer for World War Z, you know, I instantly wanted to watch the movie. When I finally saw World War Z, I find the movie as an interesting expansion to the genre of zombie films. It's the first zombie movie, to my knowledge, that approached the genre from a clinical organizational perspective. What I mean by clinical organizational perspective is that most zombie films have been told in a personal perspective. You know, you follow people as they try to survive against zombies. That's pretty much the premise of every zombie film. Mostly you see the survivors holed up in a house or a mall or a contained location, and you see how they survive and the personal interactions they have with their fellow survivors. Mostly the movie focuses on one's individual's journey. As the audience, we put ourselves in their shoes. How do we survive in that kind of situation? But for the most part, we have never seen the zombie outbreak from the government's perspective, from the World Health Organization or the Center for Disease Control perspective. Basically, from the people whose job is to protect the public. You know, you always wonder what the government will do in an event of a zombie outbreak. A zombie outbreak is no different from a pandemic of a deadly disease. Like, I don't know, like a couple, like 5 years ago or something, there's the SARS outbreak, and you keep hearing people all going all back in Toronto, going all crazy, and they're like, oh, you know. And it's like that, you know. Makes you wonder, because for the most part, we just see the people, you know, their experience. That's it, you know. But, you know, this time around, we get to see that perspective in World War Z. Brad Pitt's character used to be an investigator for the United Nations. He goes around in war zones and political hotspots investigating war crimes and what have you, you know, what have you for the UN. He's burnt out from the job, and he decides to quit and be a stay-at-home dad. You know, then the zombie outbreak happens, and he's called by his boss or former boss from the UN to come in and help lead the investigation into finding patient zero, or where the outbreak first happened. To those who don't know, the standard operating procedure when it comes to outbreaks of diseases or even finding out why someone got sick is for the doctor or scientist to investigate and trace back where it all started. The thinking is, when you go to the main source, the first person who got sick, which is commonly called patient zero, it would be easier to find a cure, because in order to find a cure, you must know what made you sick in the first place. And once you know that, you know, then it's easy to find out, you know, why you got sick. You can pretty much see that procedure all the time in every episode of the TV show House. You know, yeah, like when they get stumped with a case, they go, okay, let's go to this guy's house or something or whatever. They look at this background. So it's kind of like that. So if you have seen the movie Outbreak, the one with Dustin Hoffman and Rene Russo and Morgan Freeman, Kevin Spacey, the one with like the monkey and the Ebola. So that movie shows what happens in an outbreak. In fact, you'll likely hear critics compare World War Z to the movie Outbreak, which is slightly fair comparison. I think the only similarities between the two movies are the standard operating procedure when finding a cure to a disease. So the movie follows Brad Pitt as he travels around the world investigating where the outbreak first started. So the movie's premise is like a video game, wherein you go from one level to another, and once you reach the end of one level, you get the clue to help you solve the mystery, and then you go to the next level and then you repeat the process until you reach the end and solve the mystery. The movie overall is an investigation into finding a cure for the zombie disease. On one hand, you get to see a totally new perspective of the zombie genre. It's not just all about surviving. You know, we finally get to see someone look for a cure. But I realized that what makes zombie movies awesome to watch is the personal connection you get seeing how the survivors deal with those kinds of situations and situations and scenarios. Zombie movies always have a personal point of view, that of the survivors we are following. The problem I find with the movie is that when Brad Pitt goes from one country to another chasing leads and barely escaping with his life, I feel there's a sense of detachment to the story. It feels very procedural. Don't get me wrong, there are moments in the film that was thrilling and suspenseful, but you know, upon thinking about it, you know, upon reflection, the moments that were thrilling for me is where we get to see Brad Pitt try to survive with his family. That, you know, there's no military involved. It's just him with his family trying to survive the first 48 hours of the zombie outbreak. I think why I found those parts in the film suspenseful is because I instantly formed a connection to his situation. That's the first thing you do in an outbreak. You get your family and do whatever it takes to survive. But once the movie transitions into being an investigative movie, I feel it lost that connection to the audience. It's probably because other than Brad Pitt, we barely get to know or make a connection to the other people he interacts with. He just goes, he drops in, meets people, gets a clue, and then moves on to another place and does the same thing and then does it again, you know? So, and there's one character in the movie who says something to Brad Pitt which basically reveals or foreshadows what's going to happen in the movie. And I find there's like in movies where it has mystery or something, the filmmakers or the writer, they tend to sneak in like a clue. Like the key to solving everything, to make it easier for you, you know, figure things out. But the key thing is like to not make it obvious, you know. But the thing about this is that when I was watching the movie and saw that scene, saw this character say this line, I said to myself, "Whoa, man, you just revealed the entire movie." And lo and behold, that's how the movie ended, or that's how Brad Pitt solved the mystery. You know, in fact, the filmmakers go back to that scene just to make sure the audience is aware of the foreshadowing. Maybe that, you know, and probably that's why the movie did not grab me as I thought it would, you know, once it got into the investigative part, because I already know how the investigation will turn out. Speaking of endings, the movie by far has the worst endings I have seen. It's the kind of ending where you feel there's a sequel coming up, or it feels like those endings you see in a TV series. And that's how the movie feels to me, like a big budget first episode of a TV series. There's a lot of things I liked about the movie. I like the parts where it's just Brad Pitt and his family reacting to the crazy shit happening around them. I like the parts where we get to see Brad Pitt's training and experience as a UN investigator, where he knows what to do when going into a situation where the people involved are suspicious and guarded, and it's all crazy around at the same time. I find those things fascinating, where you see the character's background in full effect. You know, it's not obvious, but it's subtle. You know, it's like watching Jason Bourne or James Bond encounter a situation and instantly knows what to do because he has the training and experience to draw upon. And also vice versa, I liked seeing how other people, how they react to those situations, but they don't have the same experience as Brad Pitt, and they don't turn out well. And that's I like that aspect, you know, you get to see in this situation, you know, people that whatever skill set they have, that's the only thing that they can go with, you know, and that's the basic thing about survival situations. If a zombie apocalypse happens tomorrow, or later in the day, God forbid, knock on wood, whatever experience and knowledge you have at this point is the only thing that you can draw upon, and it will definitely influence the decisions you make. That's one of the aspects of World War Z that managed to do well. Yeah, I saw that movie in 2D, and I was happy that I saw it in 2D rather than 3D. You know, it's personally, if given a choice, I'd rather watch movies in 2D. 3D just doesn't do it for me, you know. And if I have to watch 3D, you have to watch it at the best possible projection as possible. You know, if you have to go like big, like AVX 3D or IMAX 3D. But regular 3D, they're pretty shoddy in my eyes. So, you know, in the 2D scene, you know, when I was watching the movie in 2D, the night scenes were dark and you can barely see anything. So imagine watching the movie with 3D glasses, you know. So that's the thing. So that's something you should watch out for if you decide to watch the movie, you know, and selecting between 3D or 2D. Directing wise, I wasn't impressed by what Mark Forster did. After watching what he did to Quantum Solace, the James Bond movie, I don't think Mark Forster can direct an action movie. I think he's best at directing dramas. You know, overall, the movie was okay. There are some parts in the movie where I was like, that was thrilling and suspenseful. And then there are other parts where it did not grab me. I feel the parts that did not grab me, for example, the investigation part, could have been improved. Plus, there are some parts where the tone of the movie felt choppy, where it's like you are watching two different movies. Sometimes that storytelling method where, you know, there's two tones in the movie and then it changes halfway. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, you know. For this, for me anyway, it doesn't work. I did like how they portray the zombie movies as a physical embodiment of a virus. So that's how they did, you know, that's their portrayal. When you look at the virus under a microscope, you see the virus attack the healthy cells and turn them into a virus. And then that's how they multiply. And then they continue on and seek out other healthy cells until you completely die or something. So they take that concept of how a virus operates from a cellular level and expand it and give it a physical human form. So basically, the zombies are walking viruses, and they hunt for healthy humans and they swarm them for the sole purpose of infecting them. Once they get to infect you with the virus, they move on and find another healthy person. Of course, by then, whoever got infected has now turned into a zombie. So on World War Z, zombies are portrayed as the physical embodiment of a virus. So I find that was a cool interpretation of the zombie. So okay. So before that, before I talk about the original ending of World War Z and comparing it with the one that got released, we'll just take a quick short break for some PSAs to catch our breath, and courtesy of CITR. To those that just tuned in, I am talking about the movie World War Z. And so, what do you think of the movie? What do you think of the movie? Have you seen it? Let me know. If you want to share your thoughts to the listeners out there, just give me a call. 604-822-2487. 604-822-2487. And or by email, theprojectionist.citr@gmail.com, or by Twitter @Michael_Delior. So yeah, just, you know, tell me what you think. Okay, let's do this. Okay, let's do some PSAs.
The AIDS Vancouver Helpline is here to help. Open from 9 to 4, Monday to Friday, the Helpline answers questions about HIV and safer sex. Call to find medical support in your area without giving your name. Run by volunteers, the Helpline is one of the many programs from AIDS Vancouver combating the HIV epidemic in the Lower Mainland. While not medical professionals, our volunteers answer your questions confidentially and anonymously. The Helpline number is 604-696-4666. Or contact us at aidsvancouver.org.
Mark!
What?
Where are you going?
Skiing.
Did you clean your room and make your bed?
Sure, yeah, sure.
On Tuesday, July 2nd, CITR's Crimes and Treasons will be broadcasting live from the new UBC skate park.
Oh, gnarly!
Be sure to tune in from 5 to 9 for live DJ sets, interviews, and the lowdowns on the Vancouver skate scene. Or come by the park to shred and support local music and culture. CITR is proud to support the 36th Annual Vancouver Folk Music Festival on July 19th, 20th, and 21st at Jericho Beach.
This year's festival features over 60 artists, including Steve Earle and the Dukes, Aidan Knight, Kathleen Edwards, The Cat Empire, and many more.
Be sure to get your tickets today for the best weekend of your summer.
For more information, visit thefestival.bc.ca.
Okay. We are back. Welcome back to, you are listening to The Projectionist here on CITR 101.9 FM and on the internet at CITR.ca. This show is being broadcasted live at the University of British Columbia, Vancouver, Canada. Oh, anyway, back to World War Z. As I said earlier, the fans of the book, you know, who read the book, World War Z, hate the movie because it's not faithful to the book, and that's one of the common complaints. In fact, you know, because in fact it's totally different from what was written on the book. You know, I think the movie is okay. You know, there's some parts I liked and there's some parts I don't like, you know. But in terms of like, but I can't comment about the movie in comparison to the book because I haven't read the book. What I did got out after watching the movie is it now made me want to read the book. But before the break, I was talking about the choppy feel of the movie. And that it felt like it was done to cater to focus groups. Well, there's an article on the website movie.com where they just posted the synopsis of the original cut of World War Z. Basically, the one that's the scenes, the storyline that got changed. It reveals the changes that the filmmakers made on the story, which are significant changes. You know, it looks like half of the movie was changed, or at least 2/3. The original movie has a darker tone, and by far, I think, a very cynical tone. And it looks like it's a hardcore rated R movie than the 14A rating that's currently showing in cinemas. But for the sake of discussion, I'll talk about the ending. So, not the ending that's showing in the theaters, you know, but the alternate ending. So, and I saw, I did not know this. I only knew this like today when I was like researching for this, you know, thinking about this review. But if you don't want to, know about that, you know, that alternate ending, then consider this your spoiler warning. So, but there you go. Okay, so this is the alternate storyline to World War Z, and you judge for yourself if you've seen the movie and you compare it to this, which version would you like? So the playing Brad Pitt and Sagan, I won't reveal who she is. Sagan, there was this girl that Brad Pitt, you know, partnered with during his journey. Anyway, the two of them board a plane bound for Moscow. Upon safely landing, everyone on board is rounded up by the military. You know, the elderly and the sick are executed, and the healthy people, including an obviously shaken Brad Pitt, are immediately drafted into armed service. Though not before one nasty Russian soldier takes Brad Pitt's cell phone. And this cell phone is the one that he can only contact. He can use this to contact his wife, Karen, which is somewhere in the States. So the story then jumps forward six months later. We don't know exactly how long, but it's now winter. We catch up with Brad Pitt. He now has a full beard and has been part of the Russia's zombie clearing squad. He looks almost dead, you know, but in reality, you know, over this time, he's become an experienced and ruthless zombie killer, and he's the leader of his own equally capable unit. Brad Pitt's unit is tasked with clearing subway tunnels of zombie hordes. This is the first time we see the Lobo. So, this zombie killing tool, you know, that's a sort of a shovel / battle axe that would have been, you know, that's one of the few things that's from the book that would have made it to the movie. Brad Pitt and his team use this, you know, Lobo to slice their way through every zombie that, you know, and that they track through the tunnels. And they do this by just following their sounds. It's all routine work for them. And when they're not in the tunnels killing, they're basically just preparing to go back in. During his downtime, you know, during a downtime, we see a bit of bonding between Brad Pitt and another English-speaking friend named Simon. The two play a guessing game of what celebrities would have survived. Which celebrities would have survived the outbreak? And, you know, we get a couple. Then after that, we get a couple of intense scenes of tunnel combat. At one point, Brad Pitt has to kill one of his own comrades after being bitten. And eventually, they emerge above ground and are right in the middle of the Battle of Red Square. It's a big-ass set piece that involves several different front lines constantly fighting the hordes. You know, there's a kind of like weird plot. There's a weird plot point of Brad Pitt's team now getting reassigned to different front lines based on what their religion is. Brad Pitt and Simon are atheists. You know, the logic being that people would fight harder alongside people of the same faith. But they're segregated, and Brad Pitt tries to convince the general in charge that his elite tunnel sweeping crew should be allowed to teach those other people you know, the enormous amount of available content has pushed movie studios to be more conservative, banking on the power of event films to break through the white noise of a crowded marketplace. You're at the point now where a studio would rather invest $250 million in one film for a real shot at the brass ring than make a whole bunch of really interesting, deeply personal, and even maybe historical projects that may get lost in the shuffle because there's only 24 hours. You know? So that's, it's a sad thing, you know, and I think there's a story a while back. Also, hard rated R movies, Hollywood are very, they're not, there's a rarely, I think there's rarely a rated R big budget Hollywood movie, as in like over $100 million budget. And there was this case where, I don't know if you've read, I think a couple last year, where Guillermo del Toro had this idea, wanted to make this H.P. Lovecraft movie. He wanted to adapt to the Mountains of Darkness or something. And it had like big, you know, it had Tom Cruise, it had James Cameron as a co-producer, and it was, and he researched this and he spent time, you know, preparing for the movie, but the studio backed out and no studio wanted to invest in it. So I guess, you know, Guillermo del Toro had to drop the project and just move on, and now he's doing Pacific Rim, but you know, which is actually turned out okay. So, but still, you know, it's, you have this, it's Guillermo del Toro's like passion project, but no one would bank on it because they're afraid rated R movies won't make their money back. So, so on a different note, if you watch the trailer for World War Z, you can see the tone alluding to the original storyline. It's actually interesting. It's all about Brad Pitt being forced to go. So the first trailer is about, all about Brad Pitt being forced to go out and investigate the zombie virus. And he's all determined to move heaven and earth to get back to his family. So it's kind of like similar tone as the one, the original, original storyline. The second trailer, the one that you just heard, it was more action blockbuster tone, you know. So you don't notice this until, you know, so until the original, until you know the original ending. So I think the second one was released a few months later. So yeah. So to those that just tuned in, I was talking about the original alternate ending to the movie World War Z. And before that, I gave my thoughts about the movie. Have you seen the movie World War Z? What did you think of it? How did you feel after you watched the movie? Do you think the storyline in World War Z, you know, that was changed, would have been better than the one shown in cinemas? If you want to share your thoughts to the listeners out there, give me a call. 604-822-2487. 604-822-2487. Or by email, theprojectionist.citr@gmail.com. Or by Twitter, @Michael_Edolior. So, yeah, before we go into that, they should go to a few more PSAs, courtesy of CITR. CITR! Okay, let's do this. The heck?
Right. Thanks to sky-high gas prices, we can convince America that more drilling is the answer. High gas prices? Drill more. Prices still high? Try drilling in a wildlife refuge or off a nice beach.
Our traditional energy resources are limited. Luckily, it's easy for students like you to conserve energy.
Woke up late for class? Buy some time in the morning by taking a shorter shower.
Cut down by 1 minute every day and save enough to fund your daily caffeine fix for over a week. Plus, you save on electricity and water. Install a water-saving showerhead to save even more.
For more energy-saving tips, go to www.bchydro.com. This message brought to you by BC Hydro and CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Okay, we are back. You are listening to The Projectionist here on CITR 101.9 FM and also on the internet, citr.ca. So welcome back. To those that just tuned in, I just finished reviewing World War Z. And if you're interested of hearing the rest of the show, this show will later be on, put up online as a podcast, and I will be posting the link to that podcast on my Twitter and Facebook pages. So just go to twitter.com/Michael_Edelior or on facebook.com/MichaelEdelior.film. So, and that's where I post like mostly all my episodes, links to the podcast of previous episodes, and tell you about if I have a show coming up. And the next show, the next episode or show for The Projectionist will be next Tuesday. And it's mostly, the show is mostly happening every Tuesday at 11 p.m. So it's a late night show. And this is like just a rare event where I'm just filling in for a spot here at CITR. And I figured, hey, I have a few more, yeah, you know, movie reviews, since I wasn't able to do a review on last episode. So I figured, okay, let's do an early morning show. So I am here, and I bet you guys are wondering, man, an early talk show talking about movies. But that would be interesting, right? I don't know, you know, talk about movies first thing in the morning. So I hope you are having a great start of your day, you know, and the weather's fine. It's not raining. It cleared up. So, yeah, I hope you guys have a good rest of the day. So, now we are going to a next segment, which is we will talk about the movie The Heat, the one with Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy. So, here it goes. The Heat.
I had a joint and a few little bags of coke. Since when is that shit illegal?
The answer to your question is always.
How can I help you?
What is this, your lawyer?
I'm Special Agent Sarah Ashburn. Are you about to be interrogated by an officer?
I am an officer, and that's my perp.
Could you just close the door on the way out?
I'll shut the door on you. Will you lay down here, put your head in the door, and I'll slam it about 157,000 fucking times.
Oh, shit, girl, you better run.
The FBI has jurisdiction.
Maybe they're in here.
No, nope,
they're not in there.
What is she doing?
She's looking for my balls.
Hey, if anyone sees the captain's balls, let me know. They're about this big. They're like really, really tiny little girl balls. If little girls had balls.
I think this individual actually might be mentally ill.
According to her captain, she is the toughest cop he has.
Motherfucker!
She grew up in those streets and she knows him better than anyone.
Nice big one for you, sweetheart.
Who is that?
My mom.
Fast, die young, bad girls do it well.
You are killing us out there. You don't fit in.
I am a federal agent.
What are those?
They're Spanx. They're Spanx. They just hold everything together.
Why? What's gonna come fucking popping out? Surprise! Come on, man!
Get out, bull in China shop!
What part of out do you not understand?
You wanna go out?
We'll take you out.
I can't hold you!
Alright, let's pull him up.
No, wait, I'm not getting anywhere.
Lift my ass up!
Just tuck your head and relax your body.
Betty, what the fuck?
He's alright, right? The metal car broke his fall?
Get back! Get down!
Loosen that up.
That was pretty awesome.
Put the guns in the bag and slide it over now.
I guess you and her are kind of engaged now, huh?
What?
You just gave me a ring, motherfucker!
Yes, that was The Heat, starring Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy. What the heck was that? Oh, okay. So, the movie is directed by Paul Feig. And to those who don't know him, he directed Bridesmaids. And before that, he did a dozen or so episodes of the TV series Nurse Jackie and The Office. So that's basically the experience of Paul Feig. The movie is written by Katie DiPold, and it's her first time, you know, having that a feature film script that she wrote got made. So it's her first feature film, and before her experiences before that, she is the staff writer for the TV series Mad TV and Parks and Recreations. So, anyway, the buddy cop genre is probably one of the most familiar genres for audiences. You get two people with two different personalities, and preferably one is a straight-laced, by the book guy, and the other is the crazy, unpredictable kind of cop. And you have them partner up to solve a case. Because of their differing personalities and working styles, the two cops at first don't like each other. But as they work on the case, they get to know one another and start respecting each other. And then they end up becoming best friends, which then helps them solve the case. So that's pretty much this very straightforward concept for buddy cop films. That's everything. If you watch movies a lot, or if you're a big fan of the genre, you know, from the great ones, 48 Hours, Lethal Weapon, even Die Hard, in some extent, sort of, you know, it's a hybrid, because Samuel Jackson is not a buddy cop. Yeah, he's not a cop, but he has but they do have like buddy cop feel. Die Hard Part 3, to be exact. So, anyway, you come to think about, but all of that buddy cop films, you know, all the things you've seen, they're mostly played by guys, you know, and you rarely see a female buddy cop movie. You know, if you think about it, though, I don't think there's ever a female, all-female buddy cop movie. You know, that there's a male and female buddy cop movie, but not an all-female version of, say, Lethal Weapon. So, from the opening credits of The Heat, you can see that the filmmakers are aware of the genre archetypes their story is set in. You know, the opening credits have this, like, 70s exploitation cop vibe to it, you know. We see Sandra Bullock play a by the book FBI agent, and she's good at her job. In fact, she's probably the best at her job, you know, in terms of detective work. But she's disliked by her fellow agents because she's too uptight and comes off as a know-it-all and a little bit arrogant and pompous and bossy. So So she mostly ends up working alone, and as a defense mechanism, she prefers to be alone, which results in her being viewed not as a team player. She's later on ordered by her boss to go to Boston to solve a case finding a drug lord whose methods are straight up medieval, you know, straight out taken from the Mexican cartel, you know. So if she solves the case, there's a big chance of her getting promoted as a department head. So Sandra Bullock goes to Boston, and there she meets Melissa McCarthy, who is a local Boston police detective. Like Sandra Bullock, Melissa McCarthy is also good at her job, but she's also not liked by her fellow cops. So she tends to work alone, and she also lives alone, and she prefers it to be that way. But that's pretty much where the similarities between, Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy end. Basically, Melissa McCarthy is the opposite of Sandra Bullock. Yeah. If Sandra Bullock is uptight, prim and proper, and by the book, then Melissa McCarthy is abrasive, vulgar, in-your-face, unkempt, and happily disregards the rules. So you have those things instantly, and there's conflict, obviously. You know, the case to find the drug lord is just an excuse to get these two people in a room together, and or together in a car, and let their personalities clash, and we just step back and watch the sparks fly. And I think that's the problem with the movie. Melissa McCarthy is, Melissa McCarthy is golden, and she's dropping one-liners and sounds like she's ad-libbing left and right, and it's all funny. And the chemistry between her and Sandra Bullock is okay, it's okay. But the direction of the movie doesn't go anywhere. I was laughing out loud throughout the movie, there were parts that I was laughing out loud. But there was a point in the movie where I started to wonder, when will the movie end? Because there are scenes that just went on and on, You have Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy banter around, and then we go to the next scene where they continue bantering around. But in terms of plot and moving the story forward, it doesn't go anywhere. There are sections where the movie stops and just hangs out with the two lead actors. As much as I like watching Melissa McCarthy do her thing, if you keep repeating the same thing again and again, then it starts to lose its impact. In stand-up comedy, a comedian lives or dies by being able to read the audience and change topics and change their tone when a joke isn't working. But this one here is like the director didn't see that. And there are some jokes that did not work, or they felt drawn out, that it lost its impact. There are scenes or sketches that just went on and on, and you watch the scene and you feel a good joke just lost its impact because the scene was 10 seconds too long, or the scene continued and it wasn't funny anymore. You know the saying, too much of a good thing can be a bad thing? So that saying comes to mind when you watch The Heat. You feel like the director had a hard time bringing himself to cut the scenes short. He was watching the footage and he's probably laughing and thinks keeping the scene rolling or extending the scene would be funny. But it's not. It feels drawn out. It feels like you're milking the joke bone dry. That's the tricky thing about comedy. Finding the balance of when to stop the joke or when to push it further. And in terms of the investigation and the case, basically it's non-existent. The two of them slightly did some investigation into finding who the drug lord is, but for the most part, it's not good investigative work. There's no thrill of the hunt, difficulty in solving the mystery, or there's no danger from the bad guy. I mean, there's a typical cop movie scene, and you know, and you can spot, you know, where the bad guy pushes back, you know, does something, you know, to threaten the cops, and but you can spot that scene, what's going to happen, a mile away, you know. And if you've seen cop movies, you pretty much you know what's going to come up. So plot wise, it's just an excuse to force Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy to just to be together. It, you know, it would have been nice if the mystery of finding the identity of the drug lord would have been given some focus, and there is immediate danger in finding him. You have that as, you know, you can have that as the spine of your story, and the interactions between Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy, you know, then becomes your heart, you know, that, and that would make the movie awesome. So overall, I enjoyed watching the movie. I laughed a lot, but the movie was drawn out, which dragged down the pace and made a few of the jokes not funny. So, so that's what I think about The Heat. So to those that just tuned in, I was talking about the movie The Heat. And before that, I was talking about the movie World War Z. So have you seen the movie The Heat? And I think it's showing today. So to be fair, I saw this earlier, the movie earlier. So what did you think of it? How did you feel after you watched the movie? If you want to share your thoughts to the listeners out there, give me a call, 604-822-2487, 604-822-2487, or by email, theprojectionist.citr@gmail.com, or by Twitter, @Michael_Edellior, that's Edellior. So, and yeah, and if you decide to email or Twitter, I'll... you know, mention it on next week's episode on Tuesday, this Tuesday coming. So make sure to check out another episode of The Projectionist right after, it's the show after Crimes and Treasons, the one with Jules and EJ, the hip-hop show, which just so happens they will be having an event at the skate park, a live show at the skate park and UBC. So that's on July 2, Tuesday, and it starts from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. and then from there they go do their show from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. So you'll hear a lot of hip hop all day, and those guys are very good and they're cool cats, so worth checking out. So but yeah, I'll if you email me your thoughts about the movies mentioned, yeah, I'll talk about them and mention what you said on air this Tuesday. So that's pretty much it. And oh yeah, the projectionist.citr@gmail.com. So anyway, if you decide, before you get into the lines are open if you want to talk, but if you want, before we get into that, let's do some PSAs and show promos courtesy of CITR. Okay. Do this.
You either you've been troubled, you've been broke, you've been hungry, no job, no money. The one you love has deserted you. That makes you blue.
Got the blues? Just want to hear some blues? Tune in every Saturday afternoon from 3 to 5 for Code Blue. Right here on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, www.citr.ca. Code Blue.
Here's how he feels, but blues ain't nothing but a man, good man feeling bad, no how. That's all that is.
I'm gonna be round my vegetables, I'm gonna chow down.
Sprouts, you've ate here before. Community Eats is back for the summer.
We are your local food co-op.
We are your volunteer opportunity.
We are your meeting place.
We are your nutritious Friday lunch.
We are sustainability.
We are community.
Eats every Friday.
Come by with a reusable container, donate, and tell us what community means to you. Friday, 11:30 to 3 p.m. Food, fun, friends.
Last night, I left the bar. I was thirsty, and I don't drink wine. I was desperate. I needed blood. I turned to the only place I could. The only place that could possibly help me.
Hello, Canadian Blood Services.
Hello. I need some blood. A. Positive or negative, it doesn't matter.
I'm sorry, we're all out of A positive and negative. Would you like some O instead?
No. No, that won't do. Thank you. Good night. Save me. Save yourself. Give blood. Voluntarily.
This message was brought to you courtesy of the Canadian Blood Services and CITR Radio 101.9 FM.
Okay. We are back. You are listening to The Projectionist here on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Yes. And this is like the weekend for the Canada Day weekend. Long weekend. Yes. Okay. We will be celebrating the birthday of our nation. Yay!
Canada.
Anyway, and if to those that are listening out there, you could listen to this show live on the internet at citr.ca. So, anyway, if you are interested in hearing the rest of the show, this show will later be put up online as a podcast, and I will be posting a link to that podcast on my Twitter and Facebook pages. So, just go to twitter.com/Michael_Edelior or on facebook.com/MichaelEdelior.film. So, anyway, the next segment we're having is our news and screenings and events happening in Vancouver for the upcoming week. So, let's do this. The tentative new commercial movies coming out this Friday will be White House Down, which I guess now is Friday. So, White House Down, the Channing Tatum and Jamie Foxx movie, and then of course The Heat, and then Despicable Me Part 2 and The Lone Ranger. The one with Johnny Depp and Armie Hammer. And it's directed by Gore Verbinski, the guy who did the Pirates of the Caribbean trilogy. So those two movies, Despicable Me Part 2 and The Lone Ranger, they will have an early screening on Tuesday. So that's, I think, and it looks at the schedule, it says that around the 7 o'clock and the 10 o'clock screenings on Tuesday. And then it will have an official release on Wednesday. So, this coming Wednesday. So, those are the four movies that are coming out this week. White House Down, The Heat, Despicable Me Part 2, and The Lone Ranger. So, yes. And as for movies showing in Vancouver's art house cinemas, for the upcoming week, starting today, Friday, the Van City Theater will be showing the movie Hannah Arendt. Arendt? Arendt. Directed by Margaret von Trotta. It's a biopic of the influential German-Jewish philosopher and political theorist Hannah Arendt. And in 1961, she went to Jerusalem to report on the Adolf Eichmann trial for the New Yorker. So, and her articles were published in the magazine throughout 1963 in five parts. Then her articles triggered intense media coverage. She received fierce opposition and devastating criticism, both for her portrayal of the Jewish councils and her portrait of Eichmann. But her subsequent book, Eichmann in Jerusalem, A Report on the Banality of Evil, has achieved a highly respected, if controversial, place in most serious discussions of the Holocaust. And using footage from the actual Eichmann trial and weaving a narrative that spans through three countries, director Margaret von Trotta beautifully turns the often invisible passion for thought into immersive dramatic cinema. So that's the one, Hannah Arendt, showing at the Van City Theater starting today. And also showing at the Van City Theater, and also a new movie starting today, will be Blood Pressure, directed by Sean Garrity. And he is the director who directed My Awkward Sexual Adventure, which had a local release, I think, last month. Not June, but like the month, I think May or something. And it was a very funny movie, if you happen to catch that. And Blood Pressure is a movie about a 41-year-old mother of two teenage kids who is feeling depressed with her job. And she's a pharmacist and she's dealing with an overbearing boss and her family life is a mess. So in that gloomy situation, she starts receiving letters from a secret admirer bearing sympathy, gifts, and instructions whether she wants to continue the correspondence. Intrigued, she follows the directions and they invigorate her, even as the letters become more bizarre. Eventually, Nicole figures out her admirer's identity and things take a disturbing turn with a difficult plea. The mother, her name's Nicole, she must decide how willing is she to fulfill it, and whether there is more to this situation than it appears. So Hannah Arendt and Blood Pressure are the two movies playing as a double bill at the Van City Theater for this week. At the Cinematheque, the movies showing this week and starting today, Friday, the Cinematheque will be showing three movies in a program called Paris Times 3. And it says here, Paris on Celluloid has rarely been more strange and enthralling and puzzling and mad than in the three marvelous French masterworks the Cinematheque will be presenting over the Canada Day holidays. Anchored by a brand new 35mm print of New Wave master Jacques Rivet, long-awaited, long-unavailable movie, Le Pont du Nord, a film never before released in North America. Yeah. The movie is about a mother and daughter who set out on an odd treasure hunt through a labyrinthian Paris full of strange rules, obscure clues, complex conspiracies, and looming dangers. The movie is a claustrophobic The mother is a claustrophobic ex-con just out of prison, and the daughter is a punkish, paranoid, would-be kung fu fighter. And they're respectively played by a real-life mother and daughter, Paul Auger and Pascal Auger. So that's Le Pont du Nord by Jacques Rivet. So the second film is Leo Carax's latest movie, Holy Motors, which in many critics' estimation, it says, rivals Paul Thomas Anderson's The Master as the best film of 2012. It had a release here, I think, during the film festival last year. And I think it also had a run at Vivant City Theater. And then also, the third film is Robert Bresson's late period stunner, Le Diable Probablement. I don't know French, forgive me. But it basically, the English title is The Devil Probably. So that's by Robert Bresson. And the movie is about the last 6 months in the life of a suicidal Parisian youth who, horrified by a world of spiritual and physical pollution, rejects the conventional solutions, politics, religion, psychoanalysis offered by society. So, you know, I've seen that movie. It was okay. You know, it's very French. Jacques Rivette's films are very cynical, I find, anyway. So all three films, Holy Motors, The Devil Probably, and Le Pont du Nord, all films will be showing this week at the Cinémathèque. So for showtimes and more info about the films I mentioned, you can go to the theater's website. For the Van City Theater, their website is viff.org/theater. viff.org/theater. And for the Cinémathèque, their website is thecinematheque.ca. Pretty straightforward. thecinematheque.ca. So, special events happening this week. Okay. So, there will be an Evil Dead double bill screening at the Rio Theater on Saturday, June 29th. So they will be screening the 2013 remake of Evil Dead. And then afterwards, they will screen the 1981 original Evil Dead. So directed by Sam Raimi. So if you're an Evil Dead fan, that's happening tomorrow at the Rio Theater. Also happening at the Rio Theater will be this coming Thursday, July 4, I guess 4th of July, a 70s double bill. They will be it will be the Vancouver premiere of the feature-length documentary Big Star, Nothing Can Hurt Me. And then it will be followed by a classic high school movie, Dazed and Confused, by Richard Linklater. Anyway, those two movies will be showing July 4 at the Rio Theater. So check out their website, riotheater.ca, for just specific showtimes. And tickets are very cheap. So it's like $6 to $10. And there's also the Chevron Summer Cinema Series. And basically, this is a free open-air screenings of different movies. And for this month, starting in July 2, they will be showing for free Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Oh, yeah. Turtles in a Half Shell. Turtle Power. Anyway, so they were showing it on July 2. And July 9, they will be showing The Never Ending Story. And then July 16, they will be showing Clueless. July 23, they will be showing The Breakfast Club. And July 30, they will be showing Mamma Mia. And then there's more films showing and all throughout the summer in August too. So all movies start at dusk. So I guess dusk nowadays starts around like 9, maybe 10 or something. So the Chevron Summer Cinema Series happens from July 2 to August 27. And it's free admission, and it will be happening at Second Beach. It's at Stanley Park. So for info, you could go to their website, fresh freshaircinema.ca/summercinema/movies.html. That's a long title. I think you could just go freshaircinema.ca. And yeah, just check it out. So maybe they have a link there. So yeah, that's... yep, that's the one for today. And oh, also later on, happening today at the Vivo Media Arts Center, it's on 1965 Main Street, will be an Eric Paulson retrospective and party. The award-winning producer and director presents 7 of his films, followed by an after-party with local DJs. And the movie showing are from, I don't know which, it says here, Eve and the Fire Horse, Army of One, Island of Shadows, Protection, Edge of the World, BC's Early Years, Say I Do, Unveiling the Stories of Mail Order Brides, and Preaching It Together. So I guess just for more details, I guess you have to go to the Vivo Media Arts website, and or for more info, you could email eapaulson@gmail.com. Tickets are $10 to $20 at the door. So that's happening tonight at the Vivo Media Arts Center at 1965 Main Street, 7 p.m. So, okay. Yeah. So, and that's been it. Oh, okay. Here's one too. There's an exclusive Vancouver engagement of director John Bernard's documentary that follows the rise of the indie band The Sheepdogs from Saskatoon, who made it all the way to the cover of Rolling Stone. On the cover of Rolling Stone. Yes. And I love Almost Famous. So the movie is called The Sheepdogs Have at It. And it will be showing July 29, tomorrow also. Yes, at the Rio Theater. And so tickets are $10 to $8. So at 7 p.m. So if you want, just go to riotheater.ca and to find out for more info. So yes, that's pretty much it, guys and ladies, for pilot episode 7 of The Projectionist. Coming up, or I guess there's still more time, it's still, but later on around the 10 a.m. will be Sounds of the City, hosted by Ryan. It's a show promoting upcoming live concerts and shows in Vancouver, whether by local, national, or international acts. Anyway, if you have any cinema or film, that's the one, the show coming up this on 10 a.m. But I guess after the show, we'll just go back into our ghost mix. Anyway, if you have any cinema or filmmaking events you want me to mention on the show and let the word out, or if you want to share your thoughts, questions, opinions, reactions, or suggestions, you can send me an email, theprojectionist.citr@gmail.com. Or I'll answer it on next week's episode, you know, and I'll answer your questions on next week's episode, which will be this Tuesday at 11 p.m. So same time at CITR 101.9. If you're interested in finding out when the next episode of The Projectionist will be, or links to the podcast of this episode, or previous episodes, you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Michael_Idelior, or facebook.com/MichaelIdelior.film. So that's pretty much it. I am thankful for you guys. Hope you guys enjoyed listening to me for the last hour and a half, you know. And so thank you, guys. I wish you all a good week and a great time at the movies. Take care and have a great day. Have a great Canada Day weekend, you know. And yeah, until next time, or I'll tell you next Tuesday. Yeah, take care.
Boogie down for our neighbors to the south? Come to the $5 Fourth of July barbecue at Fortune Sound Club. Because what says America better than a cheap, tasty barbecue? featuring Oh No Yoko, Noble Oak, Little Wild, Yes Bear, My Gay Husband, and Tristan Orchard. Advance tickets available at High Life Zulu, Red Cat, and Beat Street. Sponsored by CITR. The Biltmore and CITR present A Midsummer Night's Mess, featuring live performances from four of Vancouver's top body movers, Girlfriends and Boyfriends, Sunshine, Actors, and Sex with Strangers, Thursday, July 18th at the Biltmore Cabaret. Tickets are $10 at the door.
Take me to a place where smiles, they don't seem real, and people act surprised.
Mark!
What?
Where are you going?
Skiing.
Did you clean your room and make your bed?
Sure, yeah, sure.
On Tuesday, July 2nd, CIT